Paul, let me ask you something. Do you like your family?
It's a really complicated question, Steve. I didn't realize this is where we're going to be going right now.
No, I mean, do you like seeing pictures of your family?
Yeah, sure. Pictures of my family are nice. Yes, sir.
Okay, I've got a great recommendation for you. It is the Aura Frame. You've probably seen some of these before. You go to your friend's house and they have a frame on the cabinet or in the living room or whatever, and it has digital photos.
Sure. Yes.
Well, I got this thing and I set it up, super easy to set up. I basically dumped a bunch of photos from my phone right onto it. Very easy to do. Took me just minutes.
All this sounds scary to me.
No, it's incredibly easy.
It's not hard. Okay.
And basically you can put like, seems like an almost infinite amount of photos on this thing. And then you can set the parameters and it can rotate your family through like every 30 seconds.
Amazing.
And it's great because I've got pictures of my son, my family.
Cool.
My dad passed away a few years ago. I get to see him popping up every now and then. The good ghosts of your personal history coming through on this thing.
Nice. That's nice.
They have a great deal for Mother's Day, so listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code ChinwagPod at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin El-Hassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
We're trying to ascertain?
Yes.
Okay.
Ascertain. Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why'd you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinephobe.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Hello, everyone. It's Paul Giamatti.
And I'm Stephen Asma, and this is your bonus wag with...
Errol Morris. I think also that sort of direct address camera thing that you sort of...
The direct address camera thing, the Interitron.
There we go. The exactly. That's it. Yeah. Explain that, actually.
I became obsessed with eye contact. And if you're interviewing somebody, how do you get them... to look you directly in the eye. And what I did is I invented a system using two teleprompters where you're really looking directly into the eyes of the person you're interviewing.
Yeah.
And vice versa. They're looking directly into your eyes.
Yeah.
And I made a whole lot of films using this device, which I'm still rather fond of.
Yeah.
Not always, but sometimes.
Yeah. Is there some sense that, because they're looking into an image of you, they're not looking literally at you now. They're looking at your eye in an image. They're looking at a screen. And is that because in person, it's harder to get somebody to look you in the eye? Because the person, the presence of a person makes it more difficult for people?
Well, think of what happens if you're sitting with a person. Yeah. They're looking you directly in the eye and the camera is off to the side.
Yeah.
They're not looking at the camera. They're looking at you. If they're looking at the camera, they're not looking at you. My device solved that problem. Mm-hmm. You're looking at me and directly into the camera.
Into the camera.
Yeah.
At the same time.
But I know for myself, because I have to be interviewed all the time, that I'm more comfortable, that I will find that I'm more forthcoming when I'm talking to the image of the person rather than when I'm necessarily right in the room with the person. That the energy can be a little different, that the actual presence of a person can actually, I think, change how forthcoming a person can sometimes be too.
And most interviewers are assholes.
Yes.
So that's also unpleasant.
Yes. But I also think that the removing them slightly makes it a little bit more tolerable that they can be an asshole, or that you can sort of deal with them a little bit better because they're a bit of a remove.
Yep.
But I always find that super interesting, that I'm sort of more comfortable the more removed the person seems to be for me. That's not true when I'm acting. So, you know, it's like I want the person there in the room with me. I want the eye contact. But there's something about the sort of interrogation thing seems different when the person is right in front of me.
Well, it is. I mean, when you're acting, you're not engaging the camera necessarily. You're engaging that person you're talking to on a set.
Yeah.
And vice versa. In an interview situation, it's a certain kind of interview. I like that effect.
To what extent actors are also engaging the camera and the other person is a really fucked up thing about actors. But there is a sort of interesting, you're playing both things the same way you're playing an audience and the actor on stage with you. You have this kind of multiple mind thing going.
But do you also imagine the audience as well? Because you've got camera, you've got character, and then you realize, you know, there's going to be people watching this on TV or on screen. Are you thinking of them as well?
No, not really. No, okay. I don't think so. Not really.
Because writers have to think about the audience a lot as they're writing.
I suppose so.
Don't you see yourself primarily in the scene?
Yes, for the most part, yes. And that's when, in theory, it should be best. But it's the most peculiar thing with film acting to me, the first time I did it too, that was so strange and striking and took me a long time to get used to, was when they came in for a close-up, when it went from wide shot to shot, then you get into single shot. And it's not even anymore including over somebody else's shoulder onto you. Now it's just you. I was incredibly jarred and felt really alienated from the other person and felt that who was I now acting with? Because the person was behind the camera and the principal sort of interlocutor I seemed to suddenly have was this piece of machinery in my face. Mm. And it took me a long time to get around that and be able to communicate with the person and still be in the scene. But there is some certain the person's behind the camera. The person is now behind the lens. You know, they're standing next to the lens or they're standing behind the lens. And it's strange. And suddenly you are aware. I think you're principally involved in the scene, but there is an awareness too sometimes of the camera as well. And it's a weird thing. It's a very weird thing.
One of the things that John le Carré says in your film is, he says, he's talking about spies, and he says they have this kind of self-imposed schizophrenia. And I was thinking about Paul. Just thinking about acting because I thought spies and actors have to have this kind of duality. I was just wondering, well, you know, what you thought about that. Like it's you're yourself, but you're not yourself, and that becomes kind of intoxicating or something.
It is. I mean, it's addictive in some way, and I imagine it's probably the same for spies. Yeah, the pretense is obviously addictive in some way, or you're predisposed to it in some way.
Although I don't quite see the element of betrayal in acting. Maybe I'm just not being imaginative enough.
Yeah. I'm just curious, when you've worked with actors, which I'm assuming you've worked with actors and on various, do you enjoy working with actors? Do you like it better then? Because they'll do what you tell them to do, or they'll say you know what they're going to say? Do you enjoy it working with actors?
I love working with actors.
Do you?
Yeah. Particularly good ones.
Uh-huh.
And because they bring something to the party that's unexpected.
What is it you think distinguishes a good one from a bad one? I'm just curious.
The ability to, well, you probably know a lot better than I do.
Well.
But the ability to inhabit a part, bring something to life. this film that I just finished, which has this film inside of a film. The woman that I work with, Gabriella, was just absolutely fabulous.
Yeah.
Fabulous actress.
Yeah.
Lucky to have her. You get to see something happen on camera that can often be extraordinary. And if they're really good, unexpected.
Yeah. It should be surprising. That's a nice thing. If that happens.
It's also my theory of directing, for what it's worth.
Yeah.
Is at first you never tell people what to do or what you want, because maybe they know already. Mm. And by just letting them do something, they may do it perfectly.
Yeah.
And by telling them what to do, they've lost that. Yeah. You've just destroyed
can,
it.
Can I
for
tell
no,
you?
For no can good reason.
Can I tell you how rare it is, though, that somebody does that? You'd be shocked at how rare it is that somebody actually does that. That lets you
like
sort
leaves
of
you
just
alone.
Just leaves you alone. At, oh. Yeah, just leaves you alone.
Well, we and should work together.
Well, sure. I'm available now. I'm unemployed. I'm definitely unemployed. No, I mean, but that's extremely rare. And but that level of just trusting to see what's going to happen. But I think that must be coming from a place of where you don't know what the hell's going to happen. Wow. When with most of the stuff you've made, you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, you're coming from documentaries where that's the whole thing. You don't know. And so I think that must be something of that perspective on it, because most feature directors are coming in already telling you right off the bat what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to do it.
I call it the shut the fuck up school of
nice. Nice. Absolutely. I'm all for it. I'm from the shut the fuck up school of acting too. It's like, I just am like, just shut up and do it. Although I will find it useful sometimes to hear another, they're very much more articulate actors than I am about what we're doing. And it's useful sometimes, because I'll hear things that I'll go, oh, I hadn't thought of that, or I hadn't really thought that through, or that's an interesting point that had sort of escaped me.
Do you approach it sort of more instinctually? I guess both of you, like in your craft, are you, you know, just trying to go with what your gut is telling you, or do you like try to work out theoretically what you're about? I'm assuming it's more gut instinct.
For me, it is, but you know,
in this recent film, I was interested in what my actors would give me,
right?
And without my fucking with them, and often I'm really puzzled by the idea of directors that need, you know, the 60, 70, 80, 90 takes, whatever.
Uh huh.
I like one or two.
That's and nice
wasn't it Kubrick did like a ton of takes?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think sometimes the idea with doing a ton of takes, I mean, some of it, I don't know. You hear about different guys who...
But I like Kubrick, so what can I say?
Yeah, so do I. And, yeah. And I mean, I think some of his reason for doing that was apparently to kind of try to get people to stop acting, I think, was to kind of get them so tired that they stop doing too much stuff and things like that, and it becomes less sort of, which, you know, there may be something to that, I don't know.
Chinwag is a production of Treefort Media and Touchy Feely Films, hosted and executive produced by Paul Giamatti and Stephen Asma. Executive producers for Treefort are Kelly Garner and Lisa Ammerman. Dan Carey is executive producer for Touchy Feely. Our series producer is Rachel Whitley Bernstein. Original theme music by Luke Topp, with additional music by Via Mardot. Oscar Guido is our executive in charge of production. Tom Monahan is head of audio for Treefort. Audio production supervision by Matt Dyson. Editing and mixing by Jeff Neal. Animation created by Alex Sokol. Research assistance by Aiden Brooks. Lastly, for more information, go to chinwagpod.fm and find us on Instagram or TikTok at chinwagpod, or on Twitter at chinwag_pod.